Welcome to Hype, episode 177. My name is Selena, and we've got another exciting show planned for you guys. I've got Pam here with me. Hello.
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 ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien, gracias.
Is this a foreshadow for your
It TV might
show?
Be. Wink, wink, stay tuned. We are back to talk about the latest entertainment news stories. We are from hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com, and you can head on over to that website to check out everything we talked about. Before we get into the show, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information if you have any comments on anything we talked about or if you want to suggest anything for future episodes. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on Hypeable, again, hypeable.com. And if you are interested, we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, where we ask anyone who is able to donate $2 a month. And for that, you get a weekly bonus discussion. You get a 2 videos a month. You get other bonus content, perhaps some related to Merlin, which we're currently rewatching with everyone. And contests and everything else we do is also accessible through there. A little teaser about this week's, I have a video due this month, and I am planning on talking a little bit about a recent experience that I have had with troll culture on Twitter.
I thought you were actually going to talk about like real trolls and, you know.
Yes, I went to the woods and
you found
a mountain
them.
Troll. I fought a troll and I won.
Did they have a bright colored hair or were they more like Harry Potter trollish?
Oh, like guild trolls, like the ones, the actual Danish little trolls?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. let's say that. Anyway, we'll get to this a little bit later in the show. I guess that's another teaser for everyone. But I've had an interesting week, so I do kind of want to get into that a little bit more, and I don't want to take up time here on the main show. So if you are a Patreon subscriber, if you're considering becoming one, then that might be interesting. I've made some interesting observations. Anyway, our bonus topic this week for Patreon is going to be an extended discussion of you might have guessed it, One Day at a Time, the amazing series on Netflix that we have now both seen. I've only seen the first season, but we're going to do a little bit of a extended discussion on the first season of that, because I've absolutely fallen in love, and I know Pam obviously is already in love with it. So we do want to dive a little bit deeper into the first season and do a little bit of a spoiler-filled discussion of everything that happened. So if you're a fan of One Day at a Time, then look forward to the bonus discussion on Patreon. Or if you're just like curious if it's for you, then maybe listen to that and decide. All right, so without further ado, let us move into the first segment of this week's Hype, which is How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And Pam has a very timely thing that I know nothing about, so enlighten
me. That's okay. I will, you know, honestly, like out of all of the big award shows that happen towards the beginning of the new year, the Grammys are, they might be music's biggest night, but it's the one that nobody really cares about tuning in for. I'm not sure why. I feel like people get really angry about who wins at the Grammys and how, like, you know, like they don't care for the Recording Academy's decisions. And that's fine because music is so subjective and it's personal preference. But I just really don't get that argument because the same thing happens across every single award show. Like every award show is subjective. Every, like even the Oscars, which like I feel like people get upset about, but not to the same degree as like what happens in the Grammys. Like every award show has the same problem that we're all fighting to rectify, representation and things like that. So I don't really get why the Grammys get so much flack over something that's a problem across the board. But yeah, that's a thing. But I did tune into I tuned into this year's Grammys because, you know, music is something that's like super important to me. And I thought it was a pretty great show. There were some big WTF moments and there were some really powerful moments. Specifically, I'm sure, Selena, that you might have seen that Kesha had a standout performance that night. She hit the stage with a bunch of really, really big artists of today and also of yesteryear to sing Praying along with a choir as well. And you could just feel the emotion, you know, coming off of her as she sang the track. And it was just such a powerful moment and so significant for Kesha, who had been battling, you know, her court case against Dr. Luke for the past few years and was silenced for a very long time. Her album, actually, that she put out earlier this year is incredibly powerful and a true testament to the journey that she's gone through. And if you haven't checked it out yet, I highly recommend doing so. Even just listening to the song Praying, which is just so, I imagine it was very cathartic to write, but I can't imagine being her and performing that track. Maybe it helps heal her every time she does so, but it's just, there's so much emotion in there that I can't imagine being an artist and just like reliving that pain every time I sing that song. But specifically now with the Time's Up movement and the Me Too movement, it feels like Kesha and her journey and her music is more relevant now than ever, especially when you take into account that she stood up and wasn't silent before his whole movement came into motion. So it was just a really powerful moment for her and for the whole movement that's been happening over the course of the past few months in Hollywood. And then they followed that up with a very, very, very poignant speech by Camila Cabello, who, of course, was a former member of Fifth Harmony, who talked about how important it is to support dreamers and immigrants. And that was really, really touching as well. So they kind of like hit us with a 1-2 punch, and I definitely had tears in my eyes. Some other standout performances for me were Kendrick Lamar's. Kendrick Lamar is just everything he does with music and also just with the imagery and his performances and stuff like that. He's performed at the Grammys before. He's performed at the MTV VMAs before. He is just so good at shining a spotlight on social issues that are really important. And his whole 6-minute performance was dedicated to the Black Lives Matter movement and police brutality. And yeah, if you haven't checked that out yet, I would recommend doing that, because even my mother, who is not a big fan of rap music, walked in halfway through his performance and could not look away from the television because she was just so floored by the statement that he was making, which is so important as well. Aside from the standout performances, there were, you know, like, obviously, like, they hand out awards throughout the course of the night. And I think that two of the awards that kind of got the biggest flack online were Best New Artist, which was taken home by Alessia Cara, and also Album of the Year, which was won by Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars actually kind of swept the Grammys this year. I think he took home a total of 7 awards for 24 Karat Magic. And while a lot of people were really upset about that, I feel like a lot of times people direct their anger towards winners, not in the best way. I don't think that if you're upset about an award being handed out to somebody, you should necessarily take it out on the artist or the writer or anything like that, because it's not like they're giving the award to themselves. You know, it's a decision that people that vote make, and it's very subjective. And in the case of Alessia Cara specifically, like, do I think that she should have won Best New Artist? Probably not. She's been around for a while, but Grammys have really weird rules about who qualifies and who doesn't. I would have preferred to see somebody like SZA win, because I feel like her album Control was just really unique and a great breakout first record for an artist that's relatively new. But do I think that Alessia Cara is not worthy of respect for how hard she's worked? Definitely not. And I don't think that it's right for people to take that win away from somebody else at the expense of trying to lift up your favorite person. And so that's like one of the things that I really didn't care for in terms of kind of some of the backlash I saw on Twitter specifically. And then in the case of Bruno Mars's 24 Karat Magic, like, he was up against some stiff competition. There are some amazing albums nominated this year for Album of the Year, including Kendrick Lamar's Damned, Childish Gambino's
Awaken My Love. Lorde was up for Melodrama. She was actually the only female artist nominated for Album of the Year. And it was actually really unfortunate that the Recording Academy didn't give her time to perform solo like they did with a lot of the other artists that were nominated for big awards. But the point is, it's just like, that's already a tough decision. That's like, you know, asking somebody to pick between a bunch of their favorite things. And yeah, it just kind of sucks that while Bruno Mars made a wonderful album, people are, you know, kind of tainting his win, which is a big deal for him. And, you know, he put out a record that was produced really well. It was a true testament to the history of Black music. And it was kind of like a love letter to everything from bands like New Edition and Boyz II Men to Al Green and Motown and stuff like that. It's just kind of a shame that he's kind of getting a lot of flack for a decision that he didn't make himself. So anyway, there's a lot of things that are problematic about award shows and about the Grammys and about the Oscars in terms of representation, and a lot of like genres that are newer getting the short end of the stick. But at the same time, I feel like if we're going to comment on somebody's decision to hand out an award to one artist over another, we should also do it in a much kinder way. Like, it's okay to express your opinion, but I don't think that there's any room for the hatred that I saw on Grammys night, which really kind of upset me on a much deeper level.
I wish I had something to add, but I didn't watch them.
That's okay. But I feel like even if you didn't...
I just saw the funny gifs.
Yeah, I feel like even if you didn't, it's kind of like a lot of the themes you can relate to other award shows that you're more familiar with, like with the Oscars. It's like, we shouldn't... Like, for example, like last year with La La Land over Moonlight, it's like they're two completely different films, and it's personal preference if you prefer one or the other, or if you thought one should have won over the other. And it's not really the filmmaker's fault. And they shouldn't allow to not be able to celebrate their wins if they win, or because they're not the ones making the decision, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like this deep-seated problem that we have in Hollywood for, like, with the decision makers, that, you know, they tend to choose movies that they relate to because there's no diversity behind the scenes, and that's unfortunate. And,
right,
and the same could be said with the Recording Academy. You know, a lot of people cry foul with Bruno Mars winning over Kendrick Lamar because rap music is not as highly regarded, you know? So, like, were the nominees diverse?
Right, interesting.
Yes. But, like, would Bruno Mars's 24 Karat Magic be more appealing than something like Kendrick's Damned or even Jay-Z's 444? Of course, it's going to universally appeal on the surface to more people. But to say that rap and hip hop hasn't had a surge in sales in the United States even over the past few years, that isn't one of the most highly consumed genres of music, like, that's not accurate. So it's more of a disconnect between the people that are voting and not necessarily of the American public, you know?
That's also interesting because, I mean, not to, again, get too far into it. And I obviously I'm just asking, like, I don't actually know anything, but because Bruno Mars is also a person of color, right? So is it more a question of music tastes, or is it more like, what is it?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that really kind of bothered me about the sour taste people were left with in their mouths, because you're putting down Bruno Mars and 24 Karat Magic to raise up another artist's work. And it's okay if you prefer one or the other, but at the same time, it's still a man of color who won a huge award, you know? And it might not be your cup of tea. You might not think that 24 Karat Magic was original to your ears, but maybe it was to somebody else's. Like, is it, like, incredibly influenced by big artists and genres of the past? Yes. Is there a problem with that? No, because it's not like he's doing covers. He's using that genre and being inspired by it and making it into something new that appeals to a lot of different people. The thing that I've always loved about Bruno Mars is that he transcends generations with his music, because, you know, a five-year-old could listen to it and dance, and somebody that's a young adult could be, like, super into it because it's a total bop. And somebody that's even older than we are can enjoy it because it reminds them of, you know, the good old days. And what's wrong with that? If music makes you feel something, it can't be bad.
It's true.
So just some food for thought while you're pondering over the decisions that were made on Grammy night. And even if you don't really care about who won what, I highly recommend checking out some of the big performances of the night. Like I said, Kesha had a really wonderful performance. Lady Gaga had a great performance as well. I really like Bruno Mars's performance, Childish Gambino's performance. Donald Glover actually did his song Terrified, which features J.D. McCreary, who also happens to voice young Simba in The Lion King. And I was like, that's freaking so cool. Because it's like young Simba and old Simba. Anyway, so it was really great. If you want a little taste of, you know, maybe what they might sound like together when the movie hits theaters next summer, be a fun thing to check that out, too. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, my Howie hype is a little less timely, but I do want to make sure that I talk about it. So one of the things I have been doing recently is I was reading Artemis by Andy Weir, obviously also the author of The Martian, which we, you know, the hype community loves. Obviously, the movie was really good, but I listened to the audiobook of The Martian last year, and I absolutely loved it. I think Andy Weir is an interesting story with him because he was a self-published author. He wrote The Martian, which is this really interesting, dry, science-filled book about, obviously, this man who has to survive on Mars, and all of the intricate details of how he survives is what makes the book so great. And he self-published it, and published it, picked it up, and it made, you know, tons and tons of money. And so he followed it up with this success, Artemis, which is, or with a a second book called Artemis. Have you read this book? I just need to know before I
go into my spiel. I have not, but I was trying to figure out why his name sounded familiar, and then you said The Martian, and I was like, yes, yeah, of course, got it.
Yes. So I love The Martian, and I had been looking so much forward to Artemis, which is set on the moon, and it features a woman of color in the lead role, and it's a very sort of diverse community, and it's basically sort of the same writing style. I listened to the audiobook for this one as well. It was narrated by Rosario Dawson, which was interesting. But I have to say that I did not love this book. You know, I would go so far as to say that I actually don't recommend that you read it. I would say if you haven't read The Martian, then read that. And otherwise, then maybe just give this one a pass. I think, and I've been perusing some reviews of it as well, trying to figure out what exactly it was that I didn't like, because it was a lot like The Martian in style. But I think the issue is honestly that it just doesn't have a very compelling story. Like, Jazz Bejara is the lead character in it, and Rosario Dawson gives her a really likable voice. She's a really likable personality, but she's also like a little bit of a stereotype of a character. She is a lot like the lead in The Martian, except female, and of a Muslim background, but that doesn't really come across. Like, it's very sort of almost like performative in a way. And her adventure is so, like, at once very simple and very convoluted, and the science speak is just not as gripping as the first one. Like, I honestly, and then I think another issue with the audiobook maybe that there are a lot of sort of accents in this book, and I not a criticism of Rosario Dawson, I think she does a great job, but when you're jumping from, you know, Ghanaian to Saudi Arabian to Norwegian to, well, yeah, like it does become a little bit odd to listen to, I think, as an audiobook. So I think that overall Artemis is definitely not a, if that had been the first book he'd done, I don't think that he would have found success. Like, I don't know. I feel bad saying this. Like, if you've read it and you like it, like, guys, please let me know, because I would love to hear some more positive feedback. But I will say, certainly, don't get the audiobook for this one if you're getting it at all. And, I mean, you do learn some stuff about the moon, but it's almost like it's so, the information isn't tied to anything important, so it's hard to remember. I feel like in The Martian, because all the information was literally life or death, when you were listening to it or reading it, your mind was more ready to receive and store that information. So you kind of felt like you got something out of it, which I felt like was missing in this one. So yeah, I guess that was kind of anticlimactic, but that was my impromptu review of Artemis. 2 out of 5 stars. I don't know. I don't even know. I'm trying to think of something positive to say, but I can't think of anything. So let's just move on.
Hey, that's okay. Sometimes things aren't for you.
Sometimes, right, exactly. And I think
I feel like if that's it, the if I had been of how we hype this week is everything is subjective.
True. And you know, if I think maybe if I had been reading this physically, I wouldn't have finished it. But because it was an audiobook and like I spent an Audible credit on it, I was like, well, I have to finish it now. So yeah, moving on now to the news. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about this week that is all very exciting. The first story, I mean, everyone knows what the first story is going to be because it is literally the thing that's consuming pop culture, and it certainly has upended my Twitter experience for a while. A new interview with David Yates came out, so you know that trouble is afoot, first of all. And the topic of David Yates and the ire that followed this time regarding, he's obviously the director of Fantastic Beasts, and he was talking about Fantastic Beasts, the sequel. And his revelation when asked about to what extent Fantastic Beasts 2 will explore Dumbledore's sexuality, Dumbledore's played by hashtag Young Hutt Jude Law, he said that the movie will not explicitly address his sexuality in Fantastic Beasts 2. His quote was in the EW interview, I think that, not explicitly, but I think all the fans are aware of it. He had a very intense relationship with Grindelwald when they were young men. They fell in love with each other's ideas and ideology and each other. He also talked a little bit about Dumbledore. He said he's a maverick and a rebel, and he's an inspiring teacher at Hogwarts. He's witty and has a bit of an edge. He's not this elder statesman. He's this really kinetic guy, and opposite Johnny Depp is Grindelwald. They make an incredible pairing. So this follows J.K. Rowling. Last time J.K. Rowling was asked about this was back in 2016 when she said, quote unquote, watch this space. Now it seems like we know that this space will not be Fantastic Beasts 2. There are 3 more movies in which to, quote unquote, explicitly state that Dumbledore is a non-straight human being in the Harry Potter universe, a series first. But it's not going to happen explicitly in Fantastic Beasts 2. That doesn't mean that we won't get hints. It doesn't mean that fans that already know won't be able to pick up on it, but it means that if Warner Brothers / J.K. Rowling / David Yates / whoever made this decision want to make a lot of money in China. To sum up, you know, it's this screams marketing decision, in my opinion. And there's obviously more to the story on Twitter, but I do want to just get your thoughts on this, first of all, in terms of how you think this relates to the movie. If you think on its own, this new story is expected, if you are surprised, any reactions to this revelation?
Yeah, I think I was shocked when this came out, but at the same time, after it settled, which it still really hasn't yet, I realized that we probably shouldn't have been surprised because, and that's so sad that that this kind of blew up yesterday and people are upset and rightly so, but at the same time, it's almost like we shouldn't have been surprised because, I don't know, it's just the way that a lot of present Potter has been handled has settled wrong with people. You have the case of Cursed Child 2 that essentially queer baited everybody from beginning to the end when all of a sudden, you know, Scorpius was apparently in love with Rose instead of Albus.
That didn't happen. So, I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's just like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? It's just, yeah. I feel like we were all shocked, but at the same time, we should have just seen it coming. But it's just so awful that it's something that needs to be debated at all because it's fact. It's canon.
Yeah.
We didn't make it up.
And hold that thought. Hold the thought that this is not the first instance anywhere near the first instance of people being disappointed, because I think that comes in later. But you know, it's so funny because I read this news story and my initial reaction was, of course, like, of course it's not. Of course this series is going to be to do the least possible work to establish Dumbledore's sexuality. And you know this because of how much they are shying away. Like even Credence, you know, we assumed that Credence would be an LGBT character, but now it seems, and again, we don't know this yet, so let's not jump to too many conclusions, but it seems like he will have a romantic relationship with the woman who turns into a beast in the sequel, right? So, and I think my point about China was partly a joke, but it's also true. I think when you're looking at these big series, Marvel, DC, Fantastic Beasts, all of the big series, what do they all have in common? They have all kinds of representation except for LGBT. Why don't they have LGBT? Because that will get them censored in China. Like it's literally a business decision. And I think we can be very clear about this because I think it will help settle. Like we're going to talk about Marvel a little later. I know they have a lot of great stuff going on. I don't want to like say if they don't have one thing, they're terrible, but it is very, very blatantly obvious what kind of representation they are excluding. And I also think the reason is obvious. But anyway, so this came out, no pun intended, and J.K. Rowling wrote a tweet because I guess people had seen Yates's not explicitly comment and went to J.K. Rowling and said, "What the F? Screenwriter, what is happening?" And she said, quote, "Being sent abuse about an interview that I didn't involve me, about a screenplay I wrote, but which none of the angry people have read, which is part of a 5-movie series that's only one installment in, is obviously tons of fun, but you know what's even more fun? GIF of a mute button." So this got a lot more traction than the interview itself. If you go on Twitter and you read the first tweet below it, you might see a familiar face because it is I, J.K. Rowling's arch nemesis.
Have you been blocked?
It's so funny. I have not been blocked, okay, but I bet I've been muted. But no, so I mean, there's a lot to unpack here aside from my Twitter fame, which is so funny, and I cannot wait to talk about that also in my video. But yeah, no, let's talk a little bit about this comment, because I think that, and I said this in my famous comment as well, that of course people should not be sending abuse to J.K. Rowling. Like, can we all just be clear that, like, whatever, I haven't seen any of this abuse, but I know what it's like to get abused on Twitter, so I can only imagine what she's experiencing. I can only imagine what kind of stuff she has to put up with on her Twitter feed. And I think that anyone, especially a woman, but anyone has the right to curate their Twitter experience and to not tolerate hate and to not tolerate abuse of any kind. I also think that it's a good point that this is a one part in a 5-part series. Like, I understand, like, if she thinks that people are upset because they don't think there's Dumbledore's sexuality is going to be acknowledged at all, then I understand what she's trying to say, because I'm sure that it is going to be acknowledged in some small way at some point. But I think the obvious issue here is that A, she's not addressing the people that have actual legitimate concerns. Like, she is basically acting like the only comments she's getting are haters and abusers. She's basically, this tweet is basically saying, if you're angry about this interview, then you are sending me abuse, then I'm muting you. Like, that is what this tweet is implying. And I think that this is making people really sad, because if she'd said, I'm going to mute all the abuse, and if you have legitimate concerns, I understand. That, you know, it's about what she's choosing to highlight and what she isn't. And I think when you take that into account and you add it to the fact that, like you said, Pam, this is not the first, it's not the second, it's not the third time that J.K. Rowling has been in hot water because of things about her series that is making people upset because they feel like she is ignoring their concerns or that she's misrepresenting them or not representing them at all. There's Johnny Depp. There's the Native American representation. There's the lack of people of color. There's Albus and Scorpius, like you said. There's a bunch of stuff that she has categorically ignored and played the victim about and kind of had this weird, like, superior attitude that she, because she has information that we don't have, we should basically just shut up and take what she gives us without having an opinion about it. And I think there's a lot of people very, very angry. And there's a great article up on Hypeable by Andrew about it. And I think that people are entitled to be angry. I don't think they're entitled to send her hate, but certainly entitled to be frustrated.
Yeah.
You can talk now. Sorry.
Oh, no. I totally agree. I mean, like, there are so many people that are kind of reiterating the same very thoughtful and kind of, like, heartbreaking thought process on this, specifically to Jo herself. And it's just kind of unfortunate that she doesn't owe us an explanation, but I feel like she owes us more than what she gave us, which is kind of like this, I'm going to cry in a corner because, you know, people are being mean tweet. Mm-hmm.
People, so, and also, the, yeah, and the thing is also that what this tweet implies, because if you think two steps back from this tweet, people are sending her abuse about an interview. Okay, what did the interview say?
Right.
It said Dumbledore's sexuality will not be explicitly addressed. Why do you think people are angry about that? And who do you think are angry about it? Like, what segment right. of your fan base is angry about this? And I'm not saying that anyone is entitled to send her abuse, but if you just think one step further, why are people angry? It's not, people aren't angry. This interview didn't say, yes, everyone's going to be gay.
Right.
And people were angry about that. People, yeah. This interview is saying nobody. And then you might think, well, what is, even if we're talking about the people sending her hate, again, no tolerance for hate, but think for 2 seconds about why they are so angry and why they feel that you have let them down. You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't take a lot of thought.
Right. And, you know, the thing is, too, is just whether I really honestly hope for the sake of the prolonged legacy that is Harry Potter, because the thing that's been most heartbreaking about this new resurgence of all the information that we've gotten is so many fans that now feel like they can't justify loving a story that gave them strength when they were younger.
Right.
You know, that's the most heartbreaking part. And we've said time and time again, too, that, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, yeah, it really sucks when your heroes let you down if, like, J.K. Rowling was a hero for you. But don't let that take away from the strength that you've taken from the words on a page, because when you read something, you kind of take ownership of it within yourself, within your heart. And I just, it just breaks my heart that people feel like Harry Potter has been tainted for them because of a few really large missteps that WB and J.K. Rowling herself have taken over the course of the last few years. Yeah, but I really hope that we've all just, David Yates put his foot in his mouth, misspoke, and Jo is pissed off because there's really nothing to worry about, and it's gonna show itself over the course of the film. But it's hard to be hopeful when they're not giving us anything to go off of, you know? But I do hope that we're wrong. But how, at the same time, it's like, how can we be? It kind of is, like, so black and white in terms of what both Yates and Rowling have given us.
I don't think that, for me personally, I don't really, it's not really about whether what happens in the actual films. Obviously, I will be so happy if it turns out they're hiding a secret, like, huge thing. You know, like, that would be amazing. It's hard to believe. I'm like 97% sure it's not, that's what's happening. But I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I'm not saying I wouldn't be so happy to be wrong. But I think for me, it is literally how it seems like J.K. Rowling just has no respect for her fans, and that it seems like the fans that she is claiming are at best those that blindly suck up everything she gives them And at worst, the people that actually don't want any more representation in these films and that are willing to stand by her when she, you know, sticks up for Johnny Depp and when she is cagey about Dumbledore and when she gives, like, persons of color, like, fringe roles in if they're even there. And I think that that is what is really just so sad about this, because you are right when you say that she doesn't owe us anything. And all the people saying she doesn't owe us anything are correct. And nobody owes anyone anything. You know, nobody owes each other to be decent to each other. Like, don't break the law. Don't, like, hurt people. But you don't have to be nice to them. You don't have to use your position in the world to improve visibility or representation or to make a difference. You know, she can tell her story that however she wants. But I think once that is said, we are also allowed to be disappointed by that, because we thought that she was a different person, a different author, a different voice.
And I think
Oh,
Go on. Finish your thought.
No, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say
I could keep going forever.
I think that, like, when you talk about representation in Harry Potter, it's kind of hard because, for example,
there is none.
My heritage is, like, half Mexican. I know that I'm never going to see a Mexican person in J.K. Rowling's words, right? That's, like, not going to happen. I know this, you know? But for something like Dumbledore and LGBTQ representation, it's not the same thing, because it's already something that we've taken as fact. So at this point, it's just, if they don't include it, it's erasure. So she shouldn't have ever said anything at all. Like, what was the point? What was the point of saying,
yeah,
I always thought Dumbledore was gay?
Right.
If she wasn't going to follow through with it, put your money where your mouth is. Either he's gay or he's not. And if you go back on it, you're like, I don't know. It just really bothers me.
Well, this is a pattern. It's not a one-time thing. She's been riding on the goodwill of people saying this for 10 years. It's like saying, of course there are Muslim people at Hogwarts. Yeah, sure. But if you don't show them, that doesn't count, right? Like, it's one thing to say it and it's another thing to show it, you know? And I think, but again, I will say, I want to make it perfectly clear, I think Dumbledore's sexuality is absolutely going to be addressed in the films in 2022. A brief wink to the audience. Right. Everyone knows, you know, Gaston style, or whatever his name was, LeFouvre style. That's the right. I'm going to get my Disney characters straight. but no, and we've talked about it so long. Maybe we should have made it a bonus topic, because I have so much more to say. But I'm sure we will. You guys have to write comments about it, so we have an excuse to talk about it next week as well. But the thing that I just also wanted to say about my newfound Twitter fame is the funny thing. I mean, I just keep bringing it up because basically my mentions have been flooded for 2 days with the hate, basically, funnily enough. And I do just want to say, my comment on Twitter was, you could listen to people's concerns. Twitter abuse is never okay, and by all means mute away, but many of these angry people are fans who took comfort in your writing when the world rejected them and now feel rejected and ignored and ridiculed by you as well. So I feel like that's a pretty fair comment, pretty innocent comment. The bots and the haters have found me. I have a suspicion that some kind of, like, you know, deep internet group, anti-representation group, as opposed with my at, and people are just, because right, the comments that I'm getting are not actually responding to my tweet. You know, they're saying things like, don't think you can dictate the story. And even I had one about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, and I was like, well, I'm you copy-pasted that the wrong place, dude. It's interesting. It's really funny. And, like,
even respectful comments are going to fall on deaf ears. Like, our old co-host Kyle had a really compelling tweet, and he wrote, I've been longing for LGBTQIA+ representation in your amazing world for years, since the 90s. So to get that taken away in Cursed Child and forced to wait even longer with Crimes of Grindelwald is just incredibly disappointing. All we want is to see ourselves in your world.
Yeah.
And I think the worst part about this was somebody who replied back and said, then do it yourself. It isn't her job to conform to everyone's needs and wants. You want representation? Go make it. Nothing is stopping you. But oh, how wrong you are, Twitter person, because the glass ceiling that exists between representation and like no representation is thin, but we haven't smashed through yet. It's a hurdle that we're constantly battling. It's not easy to pitch people of color, people that are gay, straight, bi, asexual. You know, it's like that's easier said than done. It's a very...
You are 100% right.
Yeah. This comment, which a lot of people have, I've seen it a lot. It's just like, you know, like you, like representation, like it's not her job to make you feel represented. But then whose job is it? Where do we draw the line?
You are absolutely right. And if this Twitter, if I had believed for a second that this tweet was legit, I would absolutely respond to something like that. My issue, the thing I was going to say with all the tweets that I've been getting, and one of the reasons that I'm not really upset or offended or anything by like this, the vast number of hate and comments like this that I've gotten, is that they're clearly all coming from some kind of database. Like if you notice these tweets, they're all the same. There are three rhetorics going around in my mentions. There is wait and see. There is it's not your story to dictate. There is representation isn't necessary unless it works for the story, which kind of overlaps with the do-it-yourself thing. And now, recently, within the past couple of hours, I've had an influx of the actually, I'm gay and I don't think this is a problem. Which is the thing, you know, like you always get this, you know, when we post articles on Hyperbole, we have like, oh, there's like no black people in this movie. Actually, I'm black and I don't think blah, blah, blah. Or actually, I'm whatever, I don't think blah, blah, blah. This is like trolling 101. And I am convinced that there is like a organized group out there who are mass sending these to anyone who steps out of the line they've drawn to basically shut them down. And the point that I wanted to make, aside from how interesting this is, and I'm going to talk about this in my video, is that these are the types of people that J.K. Rowling's rhetoric are emboldening. Like this is the type of speech, this is the strategy, this is what they feel like she is allowing them to do. This is her lack, whatever she thinks she's doing here, the result of it is that this anti-liberal, like SJW whatever agenda, the kind of people that also helped your country go to crap, they are using her silence as a reason for attacking anyone who disagrees with it. So I'm just like, I'm thinking it's so interesting that you would think people like me, people like Kyle, people like everyone who has been like, Joe, you're really offending a whole bunch of people who love you. They are the ones being attacked by those who are taking Joe's side, who are actually the people that you would think Joe would be against. So it's I'm like getting really sort of conspiracy theory here, but it's really so weird. Like if you'd asked me 10 years ago what side J.K. Rowling would be on in this fight for who gets to control which direction the media goes in, the more progressive or the more regressive, I would never for a second have guessed that this is where she would be. And this is the kind of people who would end up believing that they were taking her side, whatever her side actually is.
Yeah.
No. You know?
You're totally right. And just like in general, just to wrap this, like my thoughts
yeah,
up
in
general pop culture related idea is like now more than ever, it's so important to speak up with stuff yeah. like this, specifically in the turmoil that's going on, not just in the United States, but even like across the pond in the UK with Brexit and stuff like that. It's so, so, so important that if you feel strongly about, you know, comments like this that are made and people that they enable to just like be brave and speak up, because I was listening to the Nerdist podcast, which we've said we're big fans of on the show before, there is a really great interview with Kunal, who wrote Big Sick, along with his wife. I think his wife name is
Emily.
What's his wife's name?
Yeah.
Emily? Yeah, Emily.
Why do I know?
And there's a part, I don't know, there's a part that's in the trailer too, and but it's in the movie where he's up there doing stand-up in the film, and you know, he's Middle Eastern, and there's a heckler in the crowd that says like something like, go back to your country or something like that, or calls him a terrorist or something. And they were talking about how when they were first writing the movie, because it takes a while for movies to be made, that line like made people feel one way. But it plays so differently now within the climate that we exist in, like it or not. In theaters, in screeners, and things like that, because it's so much more accepted for people to say that and for nobody to say anything. So, yeah, I just think that it's just very important for us as consumers of pop culture to know that despite what people may make you feel when you speak your truth on Twitter, it's important to keep fighting for the things that you want to see changed and for things that you know are wrong. Because that's the only way we're going to incite a bigger change in the long run. So that's all.
Agreed.
I wanted to say. I'm going to get off my soapbox and we can continue on with the news.
And yes, and if J.K. Rowling won't do it, then guess what, guys? We have to do it ourselves.
That's right.
And you know what story this reminds you of, right? Wink, wink.
Order of the Phoenix.
How art imitates life.
That's what I'm saying.
And J.K. Rowling is playing the wrong role. I don't understand. But here we are. Oh my gosh. Yeah, we definitely are probably going to keep talking about this on future episodes. So please weigh in, because I know everyone, almost everyone who listens is into this and probably has thoughts. We have more exciting news coming up now.
Man, so many feels. We're not even like, we're like an hour into when we were supposed to start. Oh,
I know.
My gosh.
Hi, future Selena. Happy editing.
Well, speaking of representation on the big screen, Marvel is giving us the gift that I'm sure is going to keep on giving, because Black Panther is set to come out on February 16th, and some lucky people have already seen this movie via screeners, and good news for everybody that's looking forward to this. Initial reactions are calling Black Panther the best Marvel Cinematic Universe film yet. So we hit, Kendall Ashley, who is our morning news writer now, she hit the depths of Twitter to round up some critics' tweets for Black Panther. So if you want to get a little tease as to, you know, what people are saying about this film already before you head out to the theaters, you can head over to Hypeable to check out some of these initial reactions. Here are for a few of the ones that exist on the top of this post on Hypeable. There's one that reads, "Wow, Black Panther is the best MCU movie ever. I'm not even being biased. This is by far the best Marvel movie to date." Somebody else tweeted here, "Black Panther is the Hamlet of Marvel superhero movies. It feels groundbreaking because it is. I never wanted this movie to end," tweets somebody else. "And as soon as it did, I wanted to go back. Solid action, smart story, tons of personality. Shuri's my new favorite. Nakia is everything. Killmonger is incredible. T'Challa deserves to rule the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Coogler did it again." High praise for Black Panther, and I'm so excited to check this out. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh my god, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. And like, I say that knowing that I say this every time there's a Marvel movie. I have like a 90% fail rate. But no, this, I'm so excited. I think this movie is going to be fantastic. I'm so happy that people are happy. I'm so happy that people, again, speaking of representation, there's a lot of Black people who've seen this movie, who love it, who feel represented, who feel like this movie, you know, gives them what they have been craving for so long. I'm so happy for them. And just based on the reactions and the trailers and everything, I believe they're right when they say it's the best Marvel movie yet. It looks so good. And Ryan Coogler is fantastic as a director.
No. Did you see Creed?
I did see Creed, yeah.
It's really good. So good, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And Michael B. Jordan, even though he's a villain in this one, but still.
I hear he's the scene stealer. We'll have to wait and see. But do you know who's been stealing the limelight for me, though, is like the woman of Black Panther. Have you seen some of these promotional posters?
Yes, I have.
They look so good. Badass. Oh my God, I'm so excited. So, you know how I said Black Panther is like the gift that keeps on giving? It continues on because earlier this week we got the official track listing for the upcoming Black Panther the Album soundtrack, which features tracks inspired by the film. I was really excited about this when I heard that they had tapped Kendrick Lamar to co-produce this album alongside Top Dog, who is a CEO over at Top Dog Entertainment. He's really big in the music industry and stuff like that. And this track list looks so sick. I'm so excited to get my hands on this. There's music here, obviously from Kendrick himself. He's actually featured on 5 different tracks. Some of them are solos, like the first track off of this album, which is aptly titled Black Panther. Others are collabs, mm-hmm. like All of the Stars, that is already out right now and features fellow Grammy Award nominee SZA, whose solo album, by the way, Control, is wonderful. If you guys are looking for something to check out in the meantime before this hits shelves, I would highly recommend checking that out. We also have music here from Khalid, fellow Grammy nominee, Vince Staples, who's been taking the world by storm with his debut album, Big Fish Theory, and Future's on here. James Blake, he's been killing it with the rap and R&B and hip-hop collabs that he's been doing lately, which is really interesting since he's more of like an indie artist. And The Weeknd's also featured on here too, so lots of really great artists on here. If you want to check out the full track listing for the upcoming Black Panther the Album soundtrack, you can head over to hypebubble.com where you have them all listed, and this album drops on February 9th.
No Beyonce then?
Unless no Beyonce, that was... No, maybe. Well, that was a big rumor, wasn't it? Online, everybody was thinking that she was hinting with her outfits and some strategic social media posts that she might be involved in this, but no Beyonce.
Aw. Okay, anyway. Not something to be too disappointed about. Okay, so staying on the topic of Marvel movies, we have the first trailer for a movie that is perhaps garnering, rightfully so, a little less excitement, although there's like half a reason to be excited, right? So Ant-Man and the Wasp, or as we like to call it, Ant the Wasp, has its first trailer is... If you've seen it, it's actually pretty good. And mostly it's good because it features a lot of Evangeline Lilly. Like, this is funny. This is kind of like Marvel's way of doing a female-led superhero movie without doing it. You might even say it's like adding a gay character without making him explicitly gay. And Evangeline Lilly as the Wasp is kind of spewing off kind of funny, ironic comments, except it's like too real to really be funny, about how, like, if she'd been in Civil War, she basically would have saved Scott Lang, is that it? He's so forgettable, I don't even know his name, from going to prison, and now she's around, and her dad is giving her all kinds of superpowers that he's not giving to Scott Lang, and they have to work together and be partners, and she's being badass and jumping off knives, and I mean, listen, I didn't love Ant-Man, the first movie, surprise, but I'm so stoked for Evangeline Lilly and the Wasp, which should have been the name of the movie, and I just kind of like putting my bitterness aside that this is not just called the Wasp, like that they could not just market this as had one Ant-Man movie and one the Wasp movie, what the Wasp and Ant-Man, like I don't even know, something like that, but putting that aside, I think this looks good, and I think they are going to do a lot in terms of putting this character front and center, because somewhere Marvel must know that this is what people want. So have you seen this trailer? What do you think? Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm really
excited. It's no Black Panther, but...
No, I'm really excited for this. I don't know if I like loved Ant-Man. I did really enjoy certain aspects of it, like Michael Peña.
I like the post-credit scenes.
and I'm actually a really big Paul Rudd fan in general, so I was just really excited to see him, you know, spearhead something that was kind of out of his normal element, because he kind of usually just plays the lovable
goofy guy, and I guess he kind of does in Ant-Man too, but I just never really saw him as an action guy, so it was kind of cool to see him do that, because it was a little bit different for him as an actor. But yeah, in terms of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Evangeline Lilly looks great. She really was a scene stealer too in the first installment, so I have no doubts that they've given her a lot of room to play here. And I think that, you know, you're right, Marvel, in terms of the cinematic universe, is really kind of finally starting to clue into the fact that we as fans want to see women coming to the center of some of these stories. And the good thing is that we're about to get some more of that with, you know, the next story you've got coming after this. And also, there's talks of finally putting the solo Black Widow movie into production. So hopefully it just all spells good things for the future of the company and the stories that they're going to bring to life going forward.
I agree. And on that note, we have our first official or unofficial look at Brie Larson as Captain Marvel, which is filming now. They did a little bit of the filming hasn't, like, I think technically started yet, but they did a little bit of filming, and we have a look at her costume. And this is really funny. This is really interesting. This is something else that has sparked a lot of reaction on social media because, oh my God, guys, like, don't freak out, but her costume is green. Awkward. People are so mad because her costume is green. There's some interesting things to note about this hashtag shocker, the dress, the costume color. And it is that Kendall, who wrote up this story for Hypebol, speculates that it is because it is in fact her Kree costume, because that was the official Kree uniform, the first one that she was given, and then later, and probably later in the movie as well, she's going to upgrade it to her iconic red and yellow and blue costume. So when people are freaking out about this, there's like no reason to, because I think even Captain America and like Iron Man and most of these heroes in their origin story movies, they start up with like one costume and then they end up having their proper costume and they have like a hero walk moment. So it's like pretty standard. But, you know, to be honest with you, I kind of wish she'd keep the green, because I really think I really like it. I think it looks great. And I think that, like, in Marvel movies, they are really sort of pedantic about color coding their heroes red and their villains green to the point where it's kind of obnoxious. So I would love to see them break this trend. And I think that this is a costume that I would, like, 100% be up for. But the backstory of it, like, makes sense. And it's, like, there's no doubt that they're going to put her in her iconic costume. So I'm not, like, totally sure why this has caused such a stir. Do you like this costume? What do you think of it?
I'm a little bit indifferent on it.
Are you? It's, oh.
Yeah.
I love it. Sorry. I think it looks so good.
It's fine. I just, you know, the thing for me is, like, Captain Marvel, like Doctor Strange, I know nothing of Captain Marvel, so I'm just kind of along for the ride, you know?
I don't That's know anything either. I just think,
yeah, I guess good. I was a little surprised that it was this is the color scheme they're going with, because it's like, while it looks like what I've seen in the comics, it's not, you know, the same color scheme. But, you know, kind of like you said, it's one of those things where it's got the potential to change. Like, maybe this is her training suit.
It's 100% got it. Like, again, that's the thing. That's the Marvel's standard introduction movie features a dummy costume and a real costume. It's not, like, I have no doubt. And I'm, like, I'm just disappointed, because I would love for her to have this in all the movies and just, like, break with tradition. But anyway, I'll enjoy it for as long as it lasts. And I also really dig her Rachel haircut. You know, they're clearly trying to make sure we know this is set in the 90s. And I appreciate that. I think that looks really good. You can also see how pissed off she is at the camera, because clearly these pictures weren't allowed. So it's pretty funny. Anyway, hashtag Team Green all the way.
So, you know, what's really funny about this next story is that when it broke a few days ago,
All I saw was that Tom Hanks was trending on Twitter, and I was like, oh no, either he died or, like, he's the next scumbag to be uncovered, and I just could not deal with either of those. But lucky for all of us, it's actually good news, because Tom Hanks has officially been cast to play Mr. Rogers in a forthcoming biopic. So this is really interesting. Mr. Rogers, of course, is very beloved for his children's television series, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And now Tom Hanks is going to play the famed man himself in an upcoming biopic. According to Variety, the film is inspired by a real-life friendship between Fred Rogers and award-winning journalist Tom Junod. And the story involves a Senegal journalist begrudgingly accepting an assignment to write a profile piece on the beloved icon and finds his perspective on life transformed. And the movie's called You Are My Friend, and I just feel like the spirit of this really captures what Mr. Rogers has meant to people all over the world, and in terms of his optimism and his great advice and the lessons he's taught both children and adults. I think anytime there's like a big tragedy, you see the Mr. Rogers quote tossed around, look to the helpers, you'll always find the helpers. Yeah, it just really sounds like they're going to capture the spirit of who he was by telling this one specific story. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers,
it's not a thing. Mm. I know the neighborhood, like the title, but I don't know. It has no meaning to me.
Mm.
But I hear he's like a good guy, so like casting the best guy in the world, Tom Hanks, is kind of fitting.
Yeah, I know it's like this is actually one of I believe two Mr. Rogers projects coming down the pipeline very soon, because there's also a. I believe there's a documentary coming out, a Mr. Rogers documentary. So if you're a fan of Mr. Rogers, there's some interesting stuff coming out very soon. But this should be pretty interesting. And I do know, too, that he, like, I think he is also, like, a war veteran and things like that. So I think, like, if you're really interested in diving deep into Mr. Rogers's whole life, maybe the documentary might be more up your alley, but this seems like it'll be really heartwarming, and I feel like we need more of those stories right now. So
I agree, and like similar sort of related stories, Jennifer Hudson has been cast as Aretha Franklin for an Aretha Franklin biopic, so there's really good sort of casting decisions going on in the biopic world. The biopic fandom, is that a thing?
It is now. I like I love me a good biopic.
There you go.
I'm like a bit of a sucker for them. So.
If there's a Hallmark fandom, there can be a biopic fandom.
There you go. I like it. Our last story of the day here concerns a little bit of TV news. Just last week, we learned that the CW had given a pilot order to a Charmed reboot, and this kind of caused a bit of a stir. So a little bit of history behind the proposed Charmed reboot. It's not the first time that we've thought maybe the CW would give life to it. A few years ago, we actually heard that the CW was looking at commissioning a Charmed reboot, which would actually be set in 1976, and the story would feature a new set of witches. And a lot of fans took this as perhaps being a prequel to what we know of the actual Charmed series, which ran in the 90s. 1976 is a really big, it's kind of like a pinnacle year for the Charmed fandom, because I believe if I remember my Charmed lore correctly, like all the sisters would have been born, but they would have been younger. And so everybody was kind of wondering if maybe it would center around their mother, and somehow, some way, maybe like some of the original characters that we grew up loving would be intertwined with this prequel type story. But alas, the CW has completely shifted gears, and their Charmed reboot, which they have ordered from Jane the Virgin creator Jenny Snyder Ehrman, is actually going to be set in the present day and will feature a new set of witches. So the thing that's got everybody in a tizzy is the statement that the CW put out describing what we can expect from the reboot, which reads, "This fierce, funny, feminist reboot of the original series centers on three sisters in a college town who discover they are witches. Between vanquishing supernatural demons, tearing down the patriarchy, and maintaining familial bonds, a witch's work is never done." So that's really great, but the problem is that the original Charmed was already pretty feminist in and of itself and featured three amazing witches kicking ass. And Holly Marie Combs, who played Piper,
right? She played Piper, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man, I still remember my Charmed stuff. I'm so proud of myself, who played Piper in the original Charmed, tweeted out, "Here's the thing, until you ask us to rewrite it like Brad Kern did weekly, I don't even think of capitalizing on our hard work. Charmed belongs to the four of us and our vast amount of writers, crews, and predominantly the fans. FYI, you will not fool them by owning a title slash stamp, so bye." And she also, like, kind of subtweeted the idea and said something like, oh, like, that sounds familiar, like, because the original was not feminist enough. So lots of heated ideas over this. And I remember watching Charmed when it was on, but I'm not like the pinnacle of Charmed fan. So if you want more thoughts on this, I know that Kyle, again, who we talked about earlier in the show, he shared some thoughts earlier this week, and he's like a mega Charmed fan. So
yeah,
people like that are probably much more apt to talking about this, but even I think you and I can appreciate that this is kind of a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I wasn't a real fan. It's one of those things, I never got into Charmed, but you know, I think it's so interesting. I think this is kind of the first time, really, that, because there are so many reboots, like so many reboots, and people in Hollywood, like, of the originals have always been really civil about, or really like practical in their responses, being like, even I think with the Ghostbusters stuff, there was a little bit of like tension there, but it was so kept so tightly under wraps, right? So it's so interesting to have an original star just go out and be so angry and so against it and so just distancing herself from it, because you would think that there's some kind of, I don't even know, like a contract or like some kind of etiquette or something. And so I find this really fascinating, and honestly, I find it really layered too, because on one hand, I see what she's saying, and I totally get, like, especially you would be offended if they're like, we're going to make it feminist this time, guys, and they're like, what? Like, Charmed did so much for women on TV when it was on. But I also think, you know, when approaching these remakes, first of all, Charmed, why should Charmed be the one that goes free? Everything else is getting a reboot. And also, the original Charmed, I mean, there are always improvements when you go back and redo 90s shows, and representation is one of them. Like, this is kind of the theme of our show this week, but I mean, they could make the sisters biracial, they could make one of the sisters LGBTQ, they could add in so much that is sort of new. I know, you know, the Roswell reboot, which has gotten a pilot order as well, by Karina McKenzie, who used to be journalists and worked on the originals, like that is going, like we talked about, that is adding an immigration story. So because it takes place in New Mexico, the Liz character is going to be an illegal immigrant. Her parents are illegal immigrants from Mexico. And so that's going to be like add a whole new thing to the story. So I do think that there's more than one side and perspective to this, because what can you do if you can take an old brand and tell a diverse story with it? Is that not a good use of that old brand? I don't know, but I would say yes, personally. So, but at the same time, she's proud of her original work, and she doesn't feel like it's fair for them to just take it and do it again. So, and I can also respect that. So I am on the fence, to sum up. Yeah. Anyway, you would hope they would consult the original creators anyway. Mm-hmm. All right, so that brings us to the end of the news. We're going to move swiftly along into TV show of the week. And since we're going to be talking about One Day at a Time in our bonus, I just really briefly want to say that I watched the first season on Netflix, and I began watching it. And as you guys know, we talked about this with Will and Grace as well. I have a big problem with laugh tracks. I absolutely cannot deal. And I think the first episode especially was very over the top. It's not just the laugh track. It's also the way the actors act, like stage acting. Just really just doesn't work for me. And so I was like, I cannot, like, however good the story is, I cannot watch this. But everyone said, just give it a few episodes. And I think, I do think they turned the laugh track, they toned it down And obviously there's a lot of moments in One Day at a Time that don't have a laugh track. And I found myself like genuinely laughing by halfway through the season. I actually laughed out loud a bunch of times and that doesn't happen. And I cried and I just, you know, all those big reactions. I loved this. This was such a fucking good show. I totally get the hype. I see what you were saying. This totally has so, like, my family is so much like this as well. I can see so much of our family in this, and that just warms my heart. And I know that for in America, it's such an important story to tell. Again, look at a reboot that updated the premise, right? To be relevant.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of that.
Oh, I'm so glad you finally watched.
I'm
so
loved
glad to
it.
Talk about it with
yes,
you.
Yes, same.
Amazing. Same.
So why don't you talk about yours, and then I'll briefly talk about the other one that I
Yeah,
had.
Just very briefly, you know, I don't think the world needed another singing competition show, but I feel like they might be my guilty pleasure. I watched Fox's new reality singing competition, The Four, earlier this week, just before big news hit that Charlie Walk, record executive that was sitting on the panel, was accused of sexual misconduct allegations and was actually fired from the show. So he won't be featured in the season finale, which is happening next week. But the show itself is actually a very interesting premise. So the panelists for the majority of the episodes include Walk himself and then Meghan Trainor, Diddy, or Puff Daddy, depending on what he's calling. I think he's calling himself Diddy these days, but just in case, you know, you're not following along with his dozens of name changes, he's on there too. And DJ Khaled. And actually, chemistry between Diddy and Khaled kind of makes the show. And I tweeted about watching this because it's like, I don't know if it's like, because they're just like them as like public figures. They're like so larger than life. And just like everything that they do is kind of, it's got a little bit of a ridiculous element because they're such big personalities. But if there was a music competition that existed that was like the Hunger Games, I feel like it would be The Four. So the show starts off with four handpicked artists, and they get to sit on the side of the stage on four coveted chairs. And they are handpicked by the panel at the beginning. And then as the episode progresses, you see different people come on and they try to compete for the chance to challenge one of the people sitting on the four chairs on the side of the stage. And if they are allowed to challenge, so like if the judges pass them, they can challenge whoever they want. And then it's put to a vote by the audience that's in attendance. And that's how they decide if the person challenging gets to boot the person from their chair or if that person gets to stay to see another episode. So everything is kind of like high stakes because it is like a it's like a season finale every week. And I you know, the thing that I really liked about the show, honestly, is that they're not dragging it out. There's like six episodes in the first season and that's it. And I really appreciate that it's not like, you know, 6 months long and there's not like 3 million different tiers that these people have to go through. And nobody's really bad. It's just that there are some people that are better than others, which I think is really nice because, you know, American Idol was iconic in its own right. But after a while, it just gets so sad to see them bringing people on just to ridicule them for being awful. You know? Mm-hmm. So I think that like shows like The Voice and The Four and stuff like that, where there's nobody's really bad. It's just some people are farther along in terms of honing their talent. It's just a little bit nicer. And
that's good. Cause I hate those singing shows. I hate how mean they are.
Yeah.
How many dreams they crush. Like I can't watch
and there
it.
Are still,
I think it's terrible.
Like, you know, there are some people that are mean, like, but like, you know, like that guy that just got fired, Charlie Walk, like he's a piece of work and he's awful. But then you have people like, you know, Meghan Trainor, who's been in the industry for a few years, was kind of like an unconventional pop star when she first came up. And her advice was a little bit more caring. You know, it's like, you're not there yet, but keep working and come back, or, you know,
things like that. So that's really nice to see when people are encouraging and not necessarily just like, you suck, like, get out of here. So if you're a fan of singing competitions and you want something that's really easy to watch, maybe check out The Four, because we were entertained, to say the least. So
the one I wanted to quickly bring up is Altered Carbon, which is out on Netflix on the day that this podcast episode is released, so I can talk about it. I also have a review up on Hypebeast, which you can check out. I watched all, mainly just because the screeners were there and I wanted to, but then I decided to write a review anyway, and I'm curious to talk to Pam when she's seen it about it. But I will say that Altered Carbon is obviously this big sci-fi show. It stars Joel Kinnaman, Deacon Luckman, Renee Elise Goldsberry, and the beautiful scenery of Vancouver, which I can now recognize on sight. And I had been looking forward to this a lot, and I will say that overall, it wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. The story kind of exists in flashbacks and in present day. I think that the present day story is extremely convoluted, and a lot of what happens feels unnecessary, unnecessarily complicated, unnecessarily superfluous. I think that Joel Kinnaman is far and away the least engaging member of the cast, which is such a shame. But I will say the flashbacks sequences, it's almost a different show. It's fantastic. I would watch a million seasons of that. Deacon Luckman is not in it as much as you would think she would be, which is such a shame. But when she's there, she's great. Renee Elise Goldsberry is great as well. In present day, he has a partner called Kristen Ortega. I don't remember the actress's name, but she's good. And her story is good. Unlike Joel Kinnaman's story, which is bad. And the actor there's a couple of different actors that play him in flashbacks, because he gets into a new skin. And the one called Will Yun Lee, who plays him in certain flashback scenes, is amazing. He is so good. That version of Takeshi Kovacs, which is the character's name, I empathize with him so much. I enjoyed his story. I was totally enthralled. But I don't really understand the creative choice. The whitewashing thing is another thing that I think is worth talking about when everyone has seen it. Because you always think, well, if they have an Asian character and they choose to put him into a white man's body, like, what? Okay. What are they trying to say with that? I think the answer is nothing. Which is unfortunate, especially because Joel Kinnaman is so unengaging as an actor that you can't even argue they cast him because he was good. But I will say, stick with it. If you're interested in it, watch it. If you are put off by the first couple of episodes, keep watching, or honestly just skip ahead to episode 5, because that's when it starts getting really good and the flashbacks start picking up, and you get to see more of the other actors, and the story kind of pays off, ish. I'm interested if there's a season 2. I would watch, and I'm glad I did watch it, but not as amazing as I had wanted to. So there you go. Quick and precise. If only we could be like that with all stories, people wouldn't be able to keep up.
They'd be like, tell us more.
Yeah. No, we don't have time. Just keep going.
This is a long episode. Yeah. I fully blame Harry Potter.
I blame J.K. Rowling. See, it's just so many problems with her long episodes, all kinds of things. Well, we can cut out 10 minutes at the beginning where we talked about unrelated stuff.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah. Excited and not recordable stuff. So we're gonna finish, as always, with listener feedback, where we hear what you guys have to say, and it is quite a good segment of feedback this week, so I'm excited to get into it. If you want to get started with the tweets, why don't you get the first one from Ning Z?
Sure. Ning says, hey, hype. Turns out Lady Bird is coming to Singapore on the 22nd of February, 2 months earlier than when I last checked. I feel like I'm betraying Selena because I get to watch it earlier. Still hyped to finally watch it.
Yes. Well, at this point, like, I just checked the listings, and now it has like 2 screenings in my city on like March 3rd. Like standalone screenings. It looks like they're totally taking it out of on rotation, and that sucks, but good for you. I'm excited for you to get to see it. Laura Morrow says, I really loved One Day at a Time, but I want more than 13 episodes. I have so many emotions about this family. After Greek and One Day at a Time, I need another feel-good show. Thoughts? So I have an amazing book rec for you both. It's called Honor Among Thieves. So far, it seems a cross between The Host and The Hundred. I will report back to see if this is a good summary. Please do, Laura, because I'm sold based on that description alone. Feel-good shows. Let's see. You've watched The Bold Type, right, Laura? I feel like you have. Otherwise, that would be a good one.
That is a good feel-good show. Fuller House is really great, too, if you want something that's, like... and also, like, just speaking of, like, Disney-esque spinoffs, definitely Raven's Home is really cute. And then my favorite, Girl Meets World, is amazing, if you haven't checked that out.
How about The Fosters?
I've never seen it, but I feel like Laura is a fan. Didn't she tell us that she was really bummed that it was ending?
Oh, maybe that was Laura.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I thought of it.
Also,
Merlin.
Yeah. It's more reality. Well, it's definitely reality show based, but this month, the new Queer Eye is going to hit Netflix, and I found that to be incredibly heartwarming and also feel good. So maybe you want to check out the pilot and see if it's for you.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm like cycling through my catalog of TV shows in my head. I'm not coming up with anything. I will probably remember right after we stop recording. So like I'll tell you on Twitter. But I feel the need for feel-good shows, honestly. Like One Day at a Time is just like the perfect thing right now. We need more shows like that. So if other listeners have ideas, let us know.
What did I watch right before that? I feel like I watched something and then that... Oh, and with an E. I really liked that. Oh,
yeah. Well, that is a little bit stressful, though. It's not totally feel good.
It was a little bit stressful.
Yeah.
But it kind of made you feel good because it was nostalgic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Betty Anderson says, I started my Merlin rewatch today. This show was such a happy place for me at a time when I needed it, and I'd forgotten just how much I love it. Really looking forward to rewatching it with you guys. That's so sweet.
Yay.
Yay.
And CB says, okay, I've got the flu, but just found Hype rewatch of Merlin podcast. Does it matter? I finished the series rewatch on Sunday. Nope, just what the doctor ordered. Well, then you can go back and watch it again. Perfect.
I wonder if that means that she discovered us through our rewatch.
It might be, which is amazing because there's exciting. Only one episode so far. We should do more.
Rebecca says, hi, ladies. Watching Merlin for the first time with you guys and starting the podcast series. Two episodes in, let the adventure begin.
Yay. And one last one about Merlin is Emmy, who says, did you guys consider doing a spoiler section for the Merlin podcast, aka the aficionados, do for their Lost rewatch? Because I'd be interested hearing you guys, your thoughts about how season one in particular fits in with the whole series. Maybe a spoiler episode when the season is completed, ? What do you think, Pam? I think it's a great idea.
I'm down for that. I feel like I would that's love a good to. Way to do it.
Yeah. I feel like we did talk about doing something like that, like maybe as a patron bonus.
Yeah.
Not to like exclude everyone from it, but it would probably make a pretty good patron bonus. So we'll see. We'll see. If you guys are like, no, please, then maybe we won't hide it behind the $2 paywall. But otherwise, maybe we will. But we do want to talk spoilers because we've only recorded one episode and it's already hard. Not to go into like, oh, so like, how does this relate to blah, blah, blah? The Aficionados, by the way, it's a podcast. They covered The Hundred and Riverdale and Lost. And they do the thing where they talk spoiler-free and then they go spoilers. And then after the cut, they do spoilers at the end, which is actually very useful, especially for a show like Lost. I don't feel like we would need to do that for Merlin every episode, but certainly every once in a while.
So Jewel tweets, I'm currently catching up on all the Hype 100 specials from the last 2 years, and then I'll get reading. No specials for season 4? Maybe. We haven't thought that far ahead. We've talked about it, though.
Yeah, we have talked about it. I don't really remember why we kept it up, but I know we do want to do some kind of season 4, or at least I do. I'm just putting words in Pam's mouth. Before season 5. And season 5 comes out in April, so we have time.
Right. It just won't
to rewatch
it. Actually, you and Kristen used to do, like, little mini specials, right?
True. True. Yeah, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah. It's more like, it won't be like we've done it in the past, because now we're all at the same point.
So. Yeah, so now it would be, I mean, I have to rewatch it because I've already forgotten everything because I have a bad memory. So I have to rewatch it before season 5.
And plot like, twist, Selena is actually the newbie.
Yeah, yes. Amazing. Everything I learned from The 100, I learned from reading back my old reviews because I forgot everything that happened. .hypeable.com. Anyway, the short answer is probably yes. Watch this space. Quote J.K. Rowling, 2016. Moving on to emails, we have one from Alex Claro. Do you want to get that?
Yes. Alex says, "Hi, ladies. I finished watching The Runaways a few weeks ago, and I wanted to share some thoughts. I don't know anything about the comics or who these characters were, so I came at it completely fresh. All I knew is how many people found it enjoyable. I think I may have had too high expectations for it because I came out of it a bit disappointed. I knew it would be mainly an origin story, but I feel like it dragged on too long. There was no wow moment at the end of the season. There was so much of the characters that I felt were underdeveloped. Like, we were just given the bare bones of them. I do want to continue watching the show because I still want to know what comes next. I hope to learn more about the parents. Maybe since I'm getting older, I relate more to their struggles as adults, and I need them to succeed than to the children. I hope to learn not only how they got the gifts, but how it changed them into the people they are now. I think it was on this podcast, the Rewatchable Podcast, or a combination of both, that I've heard this. The older we get, the more we start to relate to different characters, and we start to see a completely different part of the show. Buffy, for example, during this current rewatch, I have related to Giles and Miss Callender on different levels. The things they say make sense to me now. Has there been anything you guys have noticed where a show has changed based on your age and when you watch it? Thanks, ladies. Love listening to you guys. Alex." Yes, I think Merima and I talked about this with our Gilmore Girls rewatch, that the older we get, the less, like, attractive some aspects of, like, Lorelai's personality are. Love Lorelai Gilmore, but she definitely exudes much, like, the cool mom is, like, much cooler when you're younger and you wish that she was your mom, and then some of the decisions that she makes or doesn't make are really frustrating because they feel like they would be easy to fix. And definitely much more sympathetic to characters like Mr. Molina and Luke and things like that. So
I can even see it when I'm watching shows now. Like, I was thinking about One Day at a Time and how, like, that would be, there's the kids' stories are so, like, identifiable on one level, but, like, I'm 100%, I'm like the mom, I forget her name, but, like, that is who I would probably identify with now. And that's really interesting to sort of put yourself in that situation, or even something like The 100, where I'm like, I find myself, like, I know, like, a lot of younger viewers just solely identify with the kids, and a lot of, like, older viewers solely identify with the parents, and I think my age bracket sort of solidly in the middle, and I can sort of identify with both. It's really interesting. I wonder when I rewatch it in 50 years how I'll feel. It's always interesting to watch shows with my mother as well, because obviously she, I don't think you really think about it, but just the kinds of people that you tend to identify with shift. I will say in Runaways, even to bring it back to Alex's original point, I am so much more drawn to the parents than I would have been if I'd watched it like 5 years ago even. And I think it's so interesting, Alex, that you have that reaction to it. And thank you for sharing it, because I honestly think one of the things I really love about Runaways, and I think they do a spectacular job giving the characters so much depth because there are so many of them. I think that considering they have a cast of like 12 characters or whatever, and even more than that, and there's only like 10 episodes of a season, I feel like I know most of them fairly well. But I will agree that there are certain, especially the adult characters, that are just kind of stereotypical. And I think that what I like is that it's almost all of their personality is drawn through their relationships to other characters, which I feel like is a really economical really good choice. But I think the downside to that at the same time is that because relationships are built to develop, if you don't have a sense of the characters before you establish their relationships and then immediately change all of the relationships, then you don't get a good sense of who the characters are. So I do agree with you in that way, that that's sort of a really interesting, the personalities are almost really fluid because they didn't anchor them before setting them into this like speed dating game almost by pairing them up with all these different characters in different situations. But I'm not as critical of it as you. I think I probably enjoyed it a little bit more. Do you have any thoughts? Any other thoughts?
I haven't finished the series yet, the season.
Oh, okay. I was like, the theories? What theories? Okay.
No, I said the series. I was thinking about Merlin, and in the UK they call it series, not season. And then I was like, wait, I'm in the wrong continent. Just back up, reverse.
Yeah, well, then you'll have to let us know.
I know. But yeah, I mean, I hope like it's because, you know, they spend a lot. I know that they spend a lot of time setting things up. So I would hope that by the end, there are some questions that are answered. Obviously, they need to keep us in suspense. But yeah, I'll let you guys know. I'll keep you updated on my progress with it.
All right, cool. Okay, so that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening to us and for sharing your thoughts. If you are listening and you would like to weigh in on anything we talked about, you can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr at hypepodcast@tumblr.com. And you can find us on Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com. And our comment section is working again, so you can once again leave your comments there. We are also looking for feedback on Merlin episode 2 and 3, which we will be recording likely at the same time, likely soon. We're a little bit thrown off our schedule because of traveling and job stuff. And so we can't tell you exactly when we'll be recording, but send in your thoughts anyway, so we have them for 2 and 3. We already have some. We would like more. And you can do that in one of the ways that I mentioned. And we also have a Patreon, like we said at the top of the show, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. And the bonus discussion this week will be about One Day at a Time. So we hope you enjoy that if you are a Patreon subscriber, and you can consider becoming one for $2 a month. Until next week, have a wonderful week, everyone. And that's the end. My name is Lena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye. I really thought I had something. Like, you know, have a wonderful week and blah, something amazing.
Maybe you forgot that we sign off and you were like trying to remember.
No.
That was what you forgot.
I was just waiting for the genius to strike and it missed.
Amazing.